Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hello and welcome to episode 9 of the A24 project here on the Nerd Party, the podcast that takes you through the back catalogue of A24 films, two films at a time, for your listening pleasure. I'm Dallas King, and with me as always is Lee Hutchison. How are you, Lee?
Yeah, really good. It seems that we're kind of about to, I think we got a review a few weeks ago that said, keep going, you're about to enter the golden period. So we've kind of moved beyond, what was it, 2014, and now we're into 2015, is it?
We're looking at our first two films of 2015. I guess we'll wait until the end of our two reviews here to decide or not whether we're entering the golden age of A24 or not. But before we do dive into our films, of course, we always start the show with some A24 hour news. After last episode's tidal wave of news, we're back to a more gentle trickle stream, but there's still a few little tidbits here and there to keep us entertained. First, big news item of the week is that 8th Grade's Bo Burnham won Best First Time Director at the Directors Guild Awards this week. Was that pleasing news to hear, Lee?
I would assume so. Again, I haven't seen the film, so if it wins reviews, if it gets jilted at the Oscars or anything, I have no strong opinions. So, but it's always pleasant to see someone like Bo Burnham getting an award, and hopefully that we're trying to hopefully get him for when he's at the Glasgow Film Festival. So, yeah, he seems like one of these good guys that deserves all the success, and I look forward to seeing his film.
I mean, the only problem is all these continued award presences and stuff like this. It continues to build the hype for this film, which you are unable to see. We can only hope that it finally delivers when you get around to finally actually watching it on the big screen.
I know, fingers crossed.
Absolutely. Second bit of news we've got this week is the Sundance Film Festival ended last week, and there was quite a few of the Grand Jury Awards and prizes went to some A24 films. There was an acting award went to Rianne Barreto for Cher, which will be coming out later in 2019. The Directing US Dramatic Award went to Last Black Man in San Francisco, again a late 2019 release. And The Souvenir won the World Dramatic Grand Jury Prize. And off the back of this, there's apparently news that the film, we talked about this one a couple of episodes ago and the fact that A24 picked it up, but apparently the film was so successful at Sundance that A24 have apparently, and I just found out this yesterday, apparently bought the rights to the sequel. Apparently there's going to be a sequel to The Souvenir Part 2, and the full cast, including Tilda Swinton, Tilda Swinton's daughter, Honor Swinton Byrne, and Tom Burke will be returning, and apparently Ariane Labed and Richard Ayoade will also be reprising the roles. Now, this is the first that I've heard that Richard Ayoade is in this film, which just raises my expectation levels even higher, which is fantastic news. So we'll be getting a sequel to a film which we haven't even seen yet with A24. This probably, I think, would I be right in saying this is probably the first sequel that A24 have actively commissioned of any of their films?
Yeah, that was my first thought as well, is that that's got to be the first sequel. So yeah, it's going to be interesting, because I'm not too sure what to expect from this movie, and I'm kind of hoping some of these movies are going to make it to sort of Sundance London for kind of about May time. So hopefully this is going to be one of them.
I think this is probably a lock for Sundance London, which is making me wonder about taking a trip down at the end of May, so we shall see. And the other big news coming out of Sundance is that A24 have acquired the rights for The Farewell for $6 million. Now, The Farewell is a Chinese-American film starring Awkwafina, who was recently in Ocean's 8 and also Crazy Rich Asians, and it's called a dramedy about a young Asian-American who travels back to China to reconnect with her grandmother, who is suffering from cancer, against the wishes and knowledge of her mother. So this is one of those ones that's clearly got a lot of praise at Sundance, and it's going to be, I guess, what they feel is going to be a breakout hit and further proof that, you know, you don't need Americans in your cast. You know, an Asian cast will be able to do a success at the box office. So this is clearly probably coming off the back of the success of Crazy Rich Asians as well. So have you heard anything about this film?
No, but I'm not too surprised that sort of people are trying to maybe copy the Crazy Rich Asians model, because it proved so successful. You know, whether you like the film or not, it showed that there's a market there for this type of film, and perhaps some kind of a market of underrepresentation. So I imagine it always like a Star Wars, or whenever something big happens, a comic book, people just start looking for that next film that's maybe somewhat similar or within a similar vein that they can sort of tap into as well. And I wonder if that's going to be the case with this one.
I think it probably will be. It's interesting to see the fact that it's going to be, it's not this out and out comedy. They're going for something a bit smaller, a bit more family led. So, but I think yeah, there's definitely going to be an audience for this, and interesting to see. I mean, what A24 and how they market it. I guess how they push it. It's how they trailer this film will be interesting to see, because they've delivered some fantastic trailers in the past and known how to pitch to find that right audience. So I'm sure they'll continue that great streak and run of form there. Another little tidbit is based, I think purely based on episode 8 and the our announcement that the First Reform hats were in stock. They apparently sold out very, very quickly. So clearly everyone heard our last podcast and decided I need to go out and get one of those. Of course, it was all the lucky people in America, because sadly they don't deliver to the UK yet. But again, another plea to A24, please sort us out with a couple of First Reform souvenir hats. I don't want to have to resort to drinking bourbon and Pepto-Bismol or wrapping myself in barbed wire to get one, but I will, because somebody has to do something. A24, get us the hats. So please, please send us the hats.
I can also announce that I've just noticed it on Twitter. The candles are back in stock as well. So we don't just give you the news of A24, we also update you every 2 weeks on the condition of the shop.
Not only their shop, but I guess it's now the perfect time to plug the A24 merchandise on TeePublic. Just type in the Nerd Party, all one word, and it will bring up a fantastic selection of not only A24 mugs, phone covers, pillows, wall art, t-shirts, hoodies, etc., but also a range across the whole of the Nerd Party network, which includes Nerd Nacho, Missing Frames, Filibuster, Aggressive Negotiations, which is celebrating and just marking its 150th episode this week. So do go and check that out. They've got a lot of great merchandise on there, and you can wear it with pride or drink from it with pride, as I am currently doing with my A24 project mug. But our final piece of news, a little exciting bit of news, is if you've been listening to the podcast for a while, you know that we do release an episode every 2 weeks. Where we look at two films, but we're going to have a bonus episode next week. Lee, would you like to fill our listeners into what they might expect from that?
Yeah, I think if it's going to be a pretty exciting one for me. And if it all falls apart, this part will become edited out, and it will be in the bloopers reel for 2019. But we're going to have Millie Shapiro on next week, which is going to be really awesome. So people might not be familiar with the name, but they'll be familiar with the noise and her face. She was Charlie in Hereditary, so we're going to be talking with her next week about her role in Hereditary and her work on Broadway and sort of her career to date. And I'm really excited to talk with such a young actress and someone that was really sort of the face for Hereditary. I mean, you think of the ad campaigns for that movie, the posters. We all know Toni Collette is the huge, the leading actor in this, but Millie Shapiro was the face of this. She was the advertising campaign. She was sort of one of the driving forces of this movie. So I'm really excited to kind of talk with her tomorrow. I'll be recording the interview. So I'm really excited to find out what it was like to be on that set. You know, Toni Collette as a mother, what was it like getting that script? And, spoilers, what was it like to see your head chopped off on the side of a road? So it's going to be a pretty exciting one for the show, I think.
I know one of the questions, I don't know if it's wrong to ask, but is it, did she get to keep the head afterwards, and keep it around
Well,
the house?
I'll have to look into that one.
That horrible sound, creepy, creepy sound. But yeah, no, I
Exactly.
mean, we were talking about how A24 cut a trailer, and we will go into, in case anyone hasn't seen Hereditary yet, I mean, way off in the future when we finally get to Hereditary, that trailer needs to be talked about, because it sells, one particular movie and then just rips the rug out from under you when you finally see it. But I expect there'll be a few spoilers in that interview special, but it's very exciting to have her on the show, and I can't wait to hear what you guys talk about. So
absolutely, well, so look out for that next week, so you won't go have to go a week without us next week.
Absolutely. So but back to this episode and our first film, and the first film we're looking at that A24 released in 2015 is Son of a Gun by Julius Avery, Australian director. People may have seen his work recently with Overlord, and according to IMDb, he's attached to direct a reboot of Flash Gordon. But the Son of a Gun currently sits on Rotten Tomatoes with a 63% fresh and 60% audience rating, which is very rare to actually have the same ratings with audience and critics. But this film stars Ewan McGregor, Brenton Thwaites, and Alicia Vikander, which I'd completely forgotten until I actually started watching it that she was in this. And the synopsis is that JR, nothing to do with Dallas, a small-time crook, finds himself locked up in a minor crime and is forced to adapt to the harsh realities of prison life. Fellow prisoner Brendan Lynch offers JR protection, but it comes at a price. Upon release, JR must help secure Lynch's freedom by staging a daring prison break. So, Lee, what was your thoughts of this film? What did you know about it before sitting down to watch it this time? Had you seen it before the A24 project?
Yeah, I had seen this. So I'd seen both these films today in the cinema. And I remember seeing this one like an early Friday morning screening. I used to have Fridays off back in the day. And I would kind of go along and see maybe a couple films at the cinema at least. And this was one that kind of popped up. And something like Ewan McGregor being in a film immediately grabs my attention. I wasn't really familiar with the plot, A24 at the time, or anything kind of like that was attracting me. I mean, I think this had, I think this was Altitude Film in the UK. So, you know, there was no association with A24. So I kind of went in expecting sort of a bit of a generic crime thriller, and that's kind of what I got. But I think Ewan McGregor, and hopefully I'm not being biased because he's a fellow Scot, I think he puts in a really good performance here. You know, in recent years he's sort of kind of been, you know, a charming kind of gentleman and, you know, a bit of a romantic lead in some things, for example. But this, he seemed to be, you know, he could switch very well from this kind of charming guy, he's going to help, he's going to do a favour, maybe he'll expect something in return, but then he can immediately turn on a dial to something really sinister. And I thought it was quite a, you know, it was a really good performance that kind of keeps this movie ticking over. I mean, it's kind of filled with a lot of the usual cliches that we'd expect from sort of outlaws and criminals on the run and heists. There was nothing you thought, oh wow, this is a revelation. But I thought it was an enjoyable kind of movie that you could watch on a Saturday and think, yeah, that was fine, and kind of move on from it.
Yeah, no, I enjoyed this movie. I'd never seen it before. It was just one that I'd never really crossed my radar. I was aware of it because of Ewan McGregor, and am I right in thinking this is our first Scot to appear on the A24 project? Potentially. I'd have to go back and double check, but I think it potentially is.
I think so, yeah.
But it was one that, you know, I'd heard about but never got around to seeing, so I was glad to get the chance to watch it for this. Now, I rented it from my library, and so the DVD cover screams at the front, Starred Up meets Heat, and I'd certainly agree with the first part of that statement. It very much reminds me of Starred Up. I'm not sure if anyone else who's listening has seen Starred Up. It's a David McKenzie film that stars Jack O'Connell as a young man who goes into prison and wants to immediately try and make a name for himself in order to survive, and he might have some sort of family relations inside who offer him a similar sort of level of protection and stuff like that. But you know, it starts off with that sort of this young man who goes in and, you know, thinks, how am I going to survive? You know, his cellmate is clearly being abused and beaten up by some of the other inmates and whatever. And, you know, he's got this sort of twinkle in his eye for McGregor's character, who initially I thought, well, maybe he fancies him, actually. Maybe it's something to do with that. But apparently McGregor's character is quite a famous criminal on the outside, and so therefore he's sort of got this sort of, you know, he wants to be like this person, but he ends up sort of taking him under his wing. And what I really liked about the film is the fact that they made Brendan Lynch Scottish, because Ewan McGregor is a great actor, and I thought he was really good in this. Like you say, you know, he can switch between charming to violent and quite intimidating at times, but bless him, something that Ewan McGregor is not all that great at times is accents. And I think if they'd attempted to make him Australian, it could have gone wrong, especially when you get to moments where he has to shout and threaten people. If you look at Gerard Butler in 300 and any other film where he's meant to be someone other than Scottish, as soon as you start shouting, it becomes Scottish. Ewan McGregor, good at doing a Alec Guinness impersonation in the Star Wars movies, but when it gets to the episode 3 and he has to do, "You were the chosen one," you know, automatically switch back to Scots. It's something that we can't help as Scottish people. As soon as we start shouting and swearing, the Scots comes out. So I'm glad that they kept him as Scottish. Yeah. And I thought it added a different dimension to it, because, you know, this is an Australian set thriller and, you know, they use the locations well and stuff like that. And the rest of his crew is Australian, and I like that. But I'm glad that they did keep him Scottish. And I like the way that, like you say, I mean, it does roll out like a very standard, generic, you know, crime thriller. You know, you've got the prison break, but then there's, you know, one last job before they got to go out. You've got the femme fatale character who gets brought in to tempt the guy. And then you don't know who to trust. But I did like the fact that throughout all that, they actually, you know, they say there's no honour amongst thieves, but there was actually this almost sort of father-son relationship. You know, it's clear that Brent Thwaite's character has lost his father. He doesn't have that figure in his life and he needs that. And Ewan McGregor becomes this surrogate father to him. But, you know, you're always expecting the double crosses, the triple crosses and stuff like that. But even at the end, how it plays out, I like the fact that, you know, he still looked out for him. And even when he could have killed him at several points, but decides, you know, I just can't do it because there is something about this kid that he likes and stuff like that. So I did like the fact that even though it could have gone down that route, they decided to keep them slightly honourable right to the end, which was quite nice.
Yeah, exactly. It kind of ends on a nice note as well. I mean, the sort of spoilers, I suppose. Like, I like that it, you know, there is sort of some redemption to an extent for Brendan, that I like that he's not been left behind, perhaps with the heist at the end, that he gets his fair share of it. And I one moment I always remembered from the film was that kind of moment towards the end when, you know, he's sitting kind of in the washroom and he just sort of clicks, "Oh my God, I've been kind of caught out here." I thought that was a really good moment. It was really suspenseful, but that felt like an original kind of moment to an extent. But yeah, it was just one of these ones that, you know, I watched it this my second time. I enjoyed it kind of as much as I did sort of the first time, which is something to say. But yeah, like, there was nothing that kind of great. And I think the comparison to Startup is, as you say, fair in the first half, but perhaps it just, you know, Startup was a pretty more intense movie, you know, really interesting inside the jail. With this, it kind of feels like it's a lot of the same tropes, that, you know, there's sexual assault going on in the jail, there's kind of men rioting and fighting with each other, there's the gangs, and I'm sure that's obviously somewhat true to life, but when you're watching a film, you're like, yeah, I've kind of seen this in hundreds of different movies. But, you know, I had read that there wasn't much money kind of going towards this film, and then when Ewan McGregor kind of signed on, the funding for the movie just sort of flowed in. So, you know, perhaps it wasn't the script or anything that really got the money kind of going for a film like this, but kind of the sheer force of someone like Ewan McGregor being involved.
Yeah, no, I mean, they, like I said, you know, the DVD said Heat, and it's not on the same level as Heat. You know, very few films are, but, you know, I thought that Avery had a good control over the main set pieces, whether it was the prison break and then the sort of the gold heist and stuff like that. So, you know, he can film an action scene, and, you know, he's proved that since with Overlord. You know, I thought was a film which did exactly what it said on the tin. It had American soldiers fighting sort of Nazi zombies and was a lot of fun. So it'd be interesting to see what he can bring to something like a remake of Flash Gordon. But I think he's got a grittiness too, which I thought lent itself well to the project. What did you think of Alicia Vikander as in the, I guess, almost sole female token role in the film?
Yeah, I had never realized when I first watched this that it was her performance. And when I started watching it, I kind of went, "Wait a second, is that her?" Kind of looked at the Wikipedia page, and there it was. I mean, she she is in sort of an unlucky position, you know. I think you can sort of see earlier on that she does have that kind of star quality, and she can go head to head with someone like Ewan McGregor, who's one of the best in the business. And I think, yeah, you can sort of see that she's at the start of her career, and she can certainly go on to do bigger and better roles, which she certainly has in the past year alone.
Yeah, no, I mean, this, looking at the sort of release dates and stuff, this was definitely near the start, just as she was breaking out. She's sort of done, sort of Testament of Youth was coming out of around about the same time. She did sort of small parts in Anna Karenina, and this was, you know, she will actually be coming up. This was actually, this was definitely before a big break, because actually, even just in the next episode, we're going to be looking at her starring role in Ex Machina. So that was when, and then, you know, following on from that, she had The Danish Girl. So yeah, this was before she really sort of broke out. So it was interesting to see her in this kind of role. And like you say, yeah, she's easily, in terms of acting chops, up there, you know, going toe-to-toe with Gregor. I think she definitely had sort of more screen presence than Brenton Thwaites, who I don't think I've really seen him in much, but I thought he was okay. But yeah, no, I mean, it's definitely clear that she's got bigger and better things to come with this. But any sort of final thoughts on Son of a Gun and where it would rank for you at the moment? And was it a good start to 2015 for A24?
Yeah, it was an okay start. I mean, it probably in sort of the lower half of the 16 or so movies, or 17 now, movies that we've watched. I thought it was perfectly fine. I mean, as I say, I've watched this twice and thought, yeah, that was enjoyable enough. It was fine. You know, sometimes you watch a movie like that and you think, oh, do I have to watch something like this again? But, you know, it was an enjoyable movie for its time. It's one of these ones that you could easily just pick up on Amazon Prime or Netflix, watch and go, yeah, I enjoyed that. Yeah, kind of enjoy it, and maybe you're playing on your phone or doing something else and you can kind of let the movie sort of wash over you. It's certainly good in that respect, and sometimes that's more than enough for someone like me.
Yeah, no, for me, I mean, it was the epitome of like a good solid 3-star film. You know, it entertained me, it didn't outstay its welcome, but you know, it will never sort of be in any of my top tens or anything like that, but you know, it was a good enjoyable movie while it lasted. And yeah, we'll leave it at that. So Son of a Gun, 3 out of 5. And yeah, definitely worth it for, I think if it wasn't McGregor in that, then I think we'd be looking at a different film. But I think we've probably got slightly higher hopes for the second film in our episode here, which is While We're Young, written and directed by Noah Baumbach. And this was the opening film of the 2015 Glasgow Film Festival. And it currently has a 84% fresh rating on Rotten Tomatoes. However, only a 51% rating with audiences. So critics were keen, audiences not so. For a film where middle-aged filmmaker Josh Shrebnick, played by Ben Stiller, and his wife Cornelia, played by Naomi Watts, are happily married but stuck in a rut. So when free-spirited couple Jamie and Darby enter their lives, it's like a breath of fresh air, especially for Josh, who pines for a youth he wishes he had. Soon Josh and Cornelia are ditching their regular friends for hanging out with hipsters, but will their friendship be able to endure the 20-year-old age gap that is reckoning? So, Lee, what are your thoughts on While We're Young? Did you see it at the Glasgow Film Festival? What was your first experience of this one?
No, I caught it on mainstream release. I missed this one at the Glasgow Film Festival, one of the years where it felt like so difficult to actually get tickets. So, yeah, I had such high hopes for this movie. Frances Ha is one of my favourite films of sort of the past decade. And Noah Baumbach is a filmmaker I've really loved for quite a while. I mean, Kicking and Screaming was great. Then, you know, some middling movies, The Squid and the Whale came along. His work with Wes Anderson, and then Frances Ha just kind of spoke to me. I just love it. So anything that he was going to do after Frances Ha was always going to get my attention. And I enjoyed the trailer. I liked Adam Driver. I think Ben Stiller always did good work with Noah Baumbach. Naomi Watts is a great actor. So I had really kind of high hopes going in. And I remembered on my first time watching it being like, okay, I really like the first half quite a bit. And then I thought the second half went off like a cliff. I mean, the first half where it focuses on sort of the mishmash of these two different couples and sort of Ben Stiller's character Josh and his wife Cornelia sort of getting to know this young hipster annoying couple was really quite funny, and it made for a good story. And then sort of the second half, when it sort of pivots to working on about documentaries and documentary ethics, kind of lost me a little bit. I was like, wait, it's now become a sort of different film, and I didn't quite enjoy that. But kind of because it's Noah Baumbach, even if I didn't like his film on a first viewing, I'm likely to give it a second go. And I did that with While We're Young kind of a couple years ago, and I enjoyed it more the second time. I sort of made peace with this sort of pivot in the second half, and I think it does go quite well, and it makes for an interesting kind of discussion and debate. And, you know, may not be the most interesting drama where people are debating what are the morals of making a documentary, but I think it kind of works if you sort of view it as it's the story of you know, Jamie and sort of his, how he goes from film hipster to sort of megalomaniac evil film director. I think that's kind of quite interesting if you almost view it through him as opposed to Josh. So I've enjoyed it on repeat viewings. So yeah, I enjoy it, but it's definitely not in the top tier of Noah Baumbach for me personally. But what about for yourself?
I think I actually would put it in the top tier of Noah Baumbach films. I loved this when it screened at the Glasgow Film Festival, and I found myself in a really sort of odd position when I was watching it, because I would have been sort of 35 at the time. So I would have been between the ages of Josh and Jamie, and actually found myself leaning more towards Josh's perspective than Jamie. So I was identifying more with the middle-aged person than the hipsters, even though I do wear skinny jeans, you know. I do have the odd hat and trilby and stuff like that. I thought, I was sitting there going, "Ooh, I should really get I quite fancy getting a typewriter. I've never done it yet, but I still want a typewriter, even though I probably would never type anything on it. I'd probably just have it sitting in a corner with one typed sheet of, you know, all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy or something like that." You know, I appreciate this sort of scenes where he's like, you know, looking at the vinyl collection and go, "This is just like my record collection, but it's all on CDs and stuff like that." But I appreciated his sort of looking at it and going, that lust for an easier time, a sort of more time where, you know, the love of physical media and stuff like that. And yeah, I could see myself more in Josh than Jamie, and I still do watching it on repeat viewing. I haven't seen it probably since the Glasgow Film Festival, so this was my first rewatch of it. And yeah, no, I'm still in the Ben Stiller camp. You know, it's set in New York. I'm a huge fan of New York, so I love sort of seeing and stuff like that. But I think I really like, I actually kind of dug the sort of the second half of the movie. I mean, I know what you're saying. It's sort of, because it starts off as one movie about this, the juxtaposition of these two couples, and then becomes sort of this, almost this guy sort of suffering this midlife crisis, and then attempting to take down the person who's almost, what he sees as almost replacing him. You know, he's taken on the, you know, he started hanging out with his wife. He kisses his wife one point at the ayahuasca ceremony. And then, you know, he's taking his father-in-law's affections in terms of documentary filmmaking as well. He's struggling to make this breakthrough in what he wants to do and what he wants to do with his life and his film. But I thought, you know, I think this was one of the first films I probably seen Adam Driver in. I knew he was in Francis Ha, but I never really remembered he was in that. He had that small part in Inside Llewyn Davis, but this was one of the first films I saw him, and I thought he was great in the role. I thought he was a fantastic sort of, he's not like an antagonist. He's not, like they say, he's not the villain. He's not evil. He's just young, which I thought was a great line at the end. You know, he wasn't setting out to, you know, ruin everyone's lives. He's just a bit of a dick about it and stuff like that. But I was rewatching it this morning and for this, and what really struck me was, you know, this was sort of made sort of 2014, came out 2015, and they're having this debate about the authenticity, like you say, of, and the ethics of documentary filmmaking. And there was this great quote, it was like, "Documentaries are over, you know, you know, it's what everyone's doing, you know, his but then Ben Stiller replies that, you know, his documentary is over. What you're doing is something else. If everyone is filming everything, what's a documentary anymore? It has no meaning if it's just some shit you recorded. Now, all you have to do is, you know, is that, I think that's becoming more and more true and more relevant to, well, you know, everyone is recording it, almost everything, you know, you've got vlogging, you've got blogging, you've got Instagram and stuff like this. People are putting more and more of their lives up on social media. And then, you know, you just have to look at streaming services like Netflix. You know, the amount, the sheer volume of original documentary filmmaking. You know, I, on your recommendation, you know, the 52 films of a moment, I watched the Abducted at First Sight movie the other day. And it was basically, you know, that gif of the surprised white man just sort of going, what? It's like, if that was basically me and Lucy, my wife's reactions to each other every sort of 10 minutes is the revelation after revelation came out in that film. And it's like you say, you know, at one point, Jamie sort of says, you know, I couldn't write this shit if I tried, you know, but he's got the core of a story and he's basically embellished how he gets there to make it more entertaining. And with the sheer volume of documentary filmmaking that's going on, you almost have to have a hook to get people to watch it. It can't just be some, you know, a talking heads documentary. You need the narrative, you need the framing device in order to get people to watch. I mean, what do you think of sort of, is he right? Is this what documentary filmmaking has become?
I think it has. I think it's probably always been that way. And I think it's quite funny when you see Josh's like father-in-law, like all this is going on around him, and he's just in like, yeah, it doesn't matter. And I find that somewhat quite amusing. I thought Charles Grodin was really good in the role. But I don't necessarily know if it matters how you get there. I mean, I always think of something like Capturing the Friedmans. You know, they've gone on to find fame and success in the Catfish TV series and movie, but I mean, that was a documentary that started all about a clown, like in New York, that went to kids' parties. That was going to be the documentary. And then it became, we've just discovered that his family has this huge paedophile story. It's full of scandal. Let's go make that movie instead. And like the whole clown thing goes out. So I've always thought kind of documentaries, you know, they find themselves in different ways and how things are covered. And it was like that kind of Free Solo recently, where these people are filming someone climbing up a mountain and they're debating, does our presence make it more likely that he could kill himself if he overthinks how he climbs this mountain because there's cameras on him? And I think that you introduce, you know, cameras into an animal environment, a human environment, things will always change and people will always find different angles to make a movie. And I think, you know, with documentaries in particular, you know, you think of people like Michael Moore, for example, Louis Theroux, you know, documentarians can really insert themselves into the movie and story. So they bring their own baggage and background, and sometimes it works, sometimes perhaps not. So I think it's just always the way it's been. And I think Josh has a romanticized view about documentary filmmaking, which has been his downfall in finishing the film that he's made in the movie. So yeah, I think Josh is a bit more kind of unrealistic, and really, like someone like Leslie and Jamie, they know how it really works. And you know, Josh being schmoozed by Jamie for, you know, money and moving his way up the chain is probably what most filmmakers have ever done. So yeah, I think there's a lot to it, probably.
Yeah, no, I'm sort of talking what you just mentioned. It makes me think of recently the sort of Dynasties program. If UK, I don't know if it was screened on BBC America, but the recent sort of David Attenborough documentaries about Dynasties, and there was one in particular. It was basically an hour of people crying at baby animals being killed in just normal natural circumstances, whether it's by predators or by, you know, the environment, stuff like that. And you see it sort of play out. And then there was one, the penguin one I'm thinking of, where these penguins get trapped due to an ice shift. They get trapped down a wee bit of a chasm, and you think, that's such a shame, you know, why doesn't anyone do anything? And, you know, one of the laws of documentary filmmaking, especially around animals, is you do not interfere with your subject. But then recently we've found that when Blue Planet is, they've introduced this sort of segment at the end where you see behind the scenes and you talk to the filmmakers and they show you how it's done. And they basically sort of dug in a small sort of trench that allowed the penguins to walk up and get out because they couldn't stand by and not do anything. And it's interesting to start to see that side of the behind the scenes side of these documentaries, whereas you would never get that usually with BBC and stuff like that. So even the traditional television and nature documentaries are now moving. They know they have to embrace a different format. So it's interesting to see. And I think I've mentioned it before on another podcast about, I think, like you say, with Capturing the Freedmans, sometimes documentaries, you're filming one thing and something else comes out. I always talk about Wrestling with Shadows, the Bret Hart story, a fantastic wrestling documentary that was filming Bret Hart. And then what it ended up is it captured the Survivor Series, which involved the Montreal Screwjob, where he was planning to go to WCW. He was going to basically end his career in WWE as the champion and then move across. No hard feelings, but Vince McMahon decided to screw him out of the title and give it to Shawn Michaels on his last night at the company. And, you know, it went backstage with him and saw footage of him basically punching out his boss and stuff like that. And it's like, you know, they're there getting one documentary and suddenly they have a whole new other documentary. And yeah, it's just like sometimes these things happen and you have to know what path to follow and stuff like that.
Absolutely, yeah. I think it's the first time we've mentioned WWE in the A24 project. So we've had our first Scottish appearance by an actor and now our first appearance of the WWE in the series. So yeah, what a show today.
Well, I think it's only a matter of time before The Rock's production company teams up with A24, surely.
Yeah, I can't wait to see what The Rock's, what it smells like for his candle.
Oh, that would be a thing of beauty. So I'm just wondering, I mean, I said when I watched the film, I identified with Josh. When you watched the film, was there a particular character that you identified? Were you leaning more towards, I can see myself as the young hipsters, or were you more... Where did you fall on the hipster / middle-aged person scale?
I know it's somewhat painful, but I can see certainly bits of myself in both, for example. So I have a huge collection of VHS artwork that I have accumulated through different means in folders. And it's just like there's a bit where they're watching like a video, I think it's Rocky 3, and it's like, yeah, I kind of can see some of that. And, you know, I've got the skinny jeans as well. And, you know, I'm no doubt, you know, we're recording a bloody A24 podcast. This is a film hipsters podcast. I think we even had a review that said as much. So, you know, I'm quite aware that I'm a hipster in some respects, but I can also see bits of myself in someone like Josh. And I've seen myself in some of those kind of characters Ben Stiller has done before in some indie movies like this and Brad Status. And there's like, yeah, I think that would probably annoy me, or I would get worked up by something like that. You know, I don't think I would go as far as him by any stretch, but I could see that. And yeah, I can certainly see myself in both, probably leaning a bit towards more like Jamie, but hopefully not as much a dick.
No, absolutely not. Definitely not. I mean, yeah, I mean, you can see the appeal of, you know, when you're talking about, you've got these new people who are basically embracing everything. You know, they're coming at you with their vegan avocado ice cream. You know, the one thing I really liked, it was just like a small moment, but it's like they're trying to remember like who was in a certain TV program or something. And then it's like Josh is like, oh, just gets out his phone. Oh, I'll Google it. And say, no, let's just try and remember. Because yeah, it's like now your phone's there. It's like the answer to that question. You know, you know, 20 years ago, you'd be in the pub, you know, debating something. It'd be, oh, what was that thing? And you would actually have to basically sit and think about it. And then 2 days later, you know, you'd call someone up and go, it was blah, blah, blah. And they go, oh, of course it was. You know, I kind of miss those times where, you know, the answer isn't at your fingertips. It's fun to try and, you know, remember the old times. And yeah, I mean, I've done VHSs and stuff like that. You know, I upgraded all my VHSs to DVD and stuff like that, but I know I could never go through that again. I'm actually recording this, looking at my entire collection in autobiographical order, and know that I would never want to have to upgrade all of these again to Blu-ray or whatever format is going to come on, Ultra 4D HK or whatever. And I like having the physical media there and be able to browse through in the tactileness of it. And yeah, no, there's so many things which I can see and appreciate. And it's like, it shouldn't need hipsters to bring it back. We should just be able to keep it and have it. It shouldn't need to come back in waves as nostalgia and stuff like that. We should just be able to keep it as is and keep the status quo, I think.
Very well said, Alice. Oh, sorry, Jamie.
Absolutely. So, any final thoughts on While We're Young or While We're Old, as I've turned into an old man moaning about the past?
Yeah, I think we're off to a good start with 2015. And as you say, we've got something like Ex Machina next. So I think we certainly are entering kind of a bit of a golden age where sort of a lot of the movies perhaps at the start of like the A24 project, you know, your Spring Breakers, Enemy, people associate with A24. And then probably quite a lot of the movies we've probably done since. I don't think people sort of think if they went name team 10 A24 movies with whether many of them would appear on it. But I think now we're kind of entering that period of things like Ex Machina and so on, where I think people will start to think, oh yeah, that's an A24 film. And I think it's going to be, yeah, it's certainly start of a golden age.
I know, I just love the term A24 film, because they are essentially, you know, a distribution company. You know, they're only now starting to get into the production company. So it's amazing that, you know, people have gone, you know, they've made these films and whatever, they've shown them at festivals. But, you know, there's just something, I love the fact that it's basically become a phrase, you know, almost like Netflix film as well. You know, they've become just this synonymous brand that, you know, these films become A24 films rather than the director's films or whatever. So I think that's just fantastic. But I mean, you're talking about a golden age of stuff, but we're currently riding the golden wave of reviews for the A24 project. We've currently got 33 five-star reviews worldwide, which is fantastic. So thank you to everyone who's taken the time out to put up a review. We had a great one this week, which scored us A24 out of 10, called us two seriously insightful film lovers who articulate releases from one of the best, most consistent production companies in independent film with pure passion and weighted detail. A change of pace from other film reviewing podcasts that are all quantity and no quality, which does have its place, but it does make for a welcome change of pace. So that's from Evan McAlpine. So thank you, Evan, for your five-star review. And you can go on to iTunes to leave us a review if you so wish. And if you do, then there's a chance, just like Evan's one, that you will get read out on the podcast. So if people would like to talk to an insightful film reviewer on Twitter, where might they be able to find you, Lee?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Lee_Nostromo, and you can find me as well on the Filibuster podcast as well, which can be just as film hipsterish as this one.
Oh, absolutely. We always wear trilbies and fedoras on and our skinny jeans on Filibuster as well. No, don't worry. And you can catch me on Twitter at Championship Celluloid, and also read my reviews on championshipseller.blogspot.com. But as I said, we'll be back in 2 weeks for episode 11, and we'll be looking at Cut Bank and Ex Machina. But of course, join us in 1 week's time for our special Millie Shapiro interview episode as Lee talks to the star of Hereditary. So thank you for joining us for the A24 project, and we'll see you soon. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.
Welcome to Nerd Party.